My chapel talks this year have dealt so far with six questions. Satan, did God really say? Jacob and his son Joseph, rejecting Satan's lying promise that we could be like gods. Am I in the place of God? God offering hope. Adam, where are you? Astrologers seeing the hope in the sky. To King Herod, where is he who is born King of the Jews? Jesus, to the sin-sick soul, do you want to be healed? And Isaac, asking how he and Abraham, his father, could approach God. Father, where is the lamb? A question by Satan, by men, by God himself. And now a question from an angel. Why do you search for the living among the dead? He asked a question to five women. Mary from the village of Magdala, Mary the mother of Jesus, Mary, the mother of James, Joanna, and Salome. And these women had come along with the disciples from Galilee to Jerusalem for the Passover. They'd seen Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead, and he'd been dead for 4 days. They had joined in the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. Hosanna to the King of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Most High. And then everything, almost with a snap of a finger, had gone just dreadfully wrong. Roman soldiers, with help from Jewish temple guards, arrested Jesus. And before they knew it, he was crucified outside the city. They watched him crucified. Very few of the men disciples were there, but they watched. They saw late in the day two wealthy men oversee taking him down from the cross, Joseph from Arimathea and Nicodemus. Nicodemus provided the spices for his burial. Joseph provided the tomb. They even watched him buried and the stone rolled in front of the entrance, all in a hurry to be done before sundown on Friday. The Jews did want to keep the Sabbath. And then, just 2 days later, before sunup, these five women, it was early April. Early April in that part of the world means the birds were singing, the flowers were perfuming the air, the trees had budded, the sun would soon be up and bring a nice warm spring day. And the women on their way to the tomb to finish burying Jesus properly. Now, why the women? Well, burial was women's work. But also, the men had fled and they had scattered when Jesus was arrested. And frankly, they were simply in hiding. It was only a few days later, they were still afraid they were going to get arrested and executed also. And they did not want to share Jesus' fate. And what was the emotion of these five women? Well, they were beyond despair, and they were lost. And what had happened was exactly what Jesus had prophesied, quoting Zechariah, "You will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered." That's an ancient picture of people with no leader and no protector. Sheep without a shepherd. Now, what's the problem with that picture for us? Well, most of us have never even seen sheep being led by a shepherd, let alone those sheep when the shepherd disappears. Now, I've seen the first. Our car in Cyprus used to periodically get stuck in villages with flocks of sheep just going across the road, and we just have to wait till the flock of sheep went over there and the shepherd would be in front. And we were glad there was a shepherd, because if the shepherd had disappeared, you'd have had complete chaos in the village with the sheep going everywhere. But we have not seen that picture. But there are other Old Testament pictures, actually more universal than sheep without a shepherd. The childless father and the widow. So let me tell you my story about the emotions of the women that morning. On Saturday morning, February 14, that's Valentine's Day, 1953, two little boys, ages 5 and 6, got up and ran into their parents' bedroom. "How's Daddy?" And our mother said two words: "Daddy's dead." He'd been in the hospital with kidneys failing, and now he was dead. 2 a.m. in the morning. And then she burst into tears, buried her face in her hands, and we crept from the room feeling somewhat guilty that somehow we'd made Mother cry. And then for the rest of the day, we were left to our own devices because she had to deal with hospital, funeral home, church arrangements, cemetery. And next day, for the oldest one, that's me, it got worse. Because two well-meaning old women at church came up to me and said to me, "Now you have to be the man of the house." And this six-year-old was just old enough to understand that that was as impossible as swimming the ocean. Some of you have no memory of a father. I know this. Others have lost your fathers in one way or another. I know that. Some of you are blessed with fathers even now whom you love and trust. Others have fathers whom you don't quite love and trust, and maybe for good reason. But these women were like fatherless children, sheep without a shepherd. They didn't have time to focus too much on themselves. They had a practical problem that they faced. How would they roll the stone away from in front of the tomb? They were on their way to do what was necessary, to do what was right, but how would they roll the stone away? Now, don't picture a boulder. Picture the photograph on the front of your bulletins. That's accurate. These tombs of rich men had stones shaped like tires in front of them, only truck tires about this high, 6 inches or so in thickness, 6 feet in diameter, and it took several men, several strong men, to roll them away. They'd be set in grooves of stones and be slipping uphill one way or the other. So you'd roll the stone up, put a fairly large stone underneath it to block it, like you would a car tire on a hill if the brakes weren't working. Who was going to roll away the stone? It's a practical problem. And then the ground shook. And they got to the tomb, and there was an angel sitting on the stone in white. Roman soldiers, face down on the ground, terrified beyond any terror you have ever felt. And they were afraid. And they went into the tomb, and the body was not there. And the angel said to them, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" Now, I want to point out four things here. Anybody who reads Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John will quickly notice that the accounts aren't exactly the same. This is exactly what happens when you get eyewitness accounts of something that has happened. You get accounts that are true, but not the same. Detectives long ago learned that when you interview four witnesses and they all give you precisely the same story, they're hearing one that they worked on together and cobbled up to make sure they're correct. I did an experiment when I got here early last fall. We had a meeting of the administrators and the department chairs, and I asked everybody at the meeting, "Please write up an account of the meeting, send it out to everybody in your department, and send me a copy." And as I read one report after another, sometimes I laughed, actually, but mostly what I noticed was they were all true, accurate, and different. All right, I was at the meeting too. I could tell these were all correct, accurate reports. But different people, for different reasons, had picked out different items to notice. If we actually had exactly the same account in all four Gospels, you would be justified in saying, huh. Let me point out something else. It was the women who found the tomb empty. Five women, in fact. Five women from Galilee. No men. If I'd been writing up a story years later and wanted to have good, strong witnesses, I would have put Joseph or Nicodemus, at least, there also. They were members of the Sanhedrin, the two dissenting members who voted not to put Jesus to death. And they would have been good, reliable, upstanding citizen witnesses, not five women from Galilee, ignorant, easily led, easily fooled evangelicals of their day. Some of you may or may not remember the Washington Post article that refers to. Here's the third thing I want you to notice. After the angels left, the Roman soldiers recovered their wits and went off to the Jewish leaders. And the Jewish leaders bribed them to say what no self-respecting Roman soldier would ever admit to: the disciples came and stole away the bodies. We're supposed to believe that these disciples, who all scattered in different directions just a few days before, scared for their lives, in hiding, got together, overpowered Roman soldiers, rolled away the stone, took off the body, and then talked to women and telling this story: earthquake, angels, empty tomb, and message. And lastly, I want you to notice that the story in all four Gospels agrees in the essentials, which is also the case when you interview witnesses if you're a detective. The women came early in the morning before sunup to finish the burial. There was an earthquake. There were angels. The stone was rolled away. The tomb was empty. And the angels had a message for them, beginning with a rebuking question: why are you looking for the living among the dead? And the answer is, because they did not believe Jesus. Jesus had said to them in a different passage we didn't read, after I am raised, go ahead of me to Galilee and I will meet you there. They should have all headed right off north to Galilee if they believed Jesus. Instead, they hung around Jerusalem feeling sorry, feeling hopeless, feeling despairing. Why? Because they simply did not believe what Jesus said. We read it. He said it a number of times. I'm going to Jerusalem. I will be rejected. I'm going to be arrested. I'm going to be condemned. I'm going to be put to death. I'm going to be buried. And on the third day, I'm going to rise again. And they did not believe him. Now we'd say, well, of course not. But wait a minute. They had seen Jesus give sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, walking to the lame, feed 5,000 with a few loaves and fish, still a storm at sea, raise Lazarus from the dead. And when Jesus said, I will be raised on the third day, they should have believed him. Now, we, because we share their general unbelief, tend to be sympathetic to them. But the angel is not sympathetic. Why are you searching for the living among the dead? Isn't it our usual reaction to God's word actually to disbelieve? In our world of death and decay, which we try to hide from, we look for life where there is death and decay. The writer of the biblical book of Ecclesiastes carries out either real experiments or thought experiments. It's not altogether clear. Devote myself to building, and at the end, It just doesn't satisfy. Chase after experiences. Travel. Drugs. Alcohol. Sex. I have a good friend who just recently died. He finished college and set off after experiences. And I won't list all of the things he did, but he just went after just about everything. And he said he finally climbed the highest peak of the Rocky Mountains, got to the very top, looked out over all the other mountain peaks and said, "Is this it?" And turned to God. Never wavered his entire life, even in his last illness, which lasted for several years. Some people seek wisdom. It's better than being a fool. But in the end, death wins. If you live 1,000 years, have 100 children, and you get rich, in the end, death wins. Apart from God, under the sun, all life has to offer is smoke and mirrors. The very last day that I taught high school mathematics for 30 years. Okay, so my very last day, the very last thing I did was proctor an English final for a class of juniors. And when the final was over, it's the end of the day, the English teacher came in, he looked at the class, he was an old man like me, he looked at the class and he says to the class cheerfully, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And I said to this English teacher, "Of the making of many books, there is no end." And he replied, "There is nothing new under the sun." And I said, "When all's said and done, hear the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all." And his last words, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And I retired. What's our problem? We don't believe God. That's our problem. We actually don't believe God. We refuse to fear him and we don't believe him. That was the women's fault. That's why they were on their way to the tomb, not Galilee. Some of you will be graduating soon. What are your plans for your life, as though you actually have the power to do that? Establish a career and be successful? Good. Get married? Worthy ambition. Multiply experiences, travel the world. Do you know you can travel any place just about in the world and support yourself? All of you can go almost any place and teach English and earn money and support yourself. It's easy. So if you want to go to Japan, you can do that. If you want to go to Korea, you can do that. If you want to go to Africa, you can do that. It doesn't work in the Netherlands. They already all know English. But it works most places. All right. You can gather up experiences. Maybe some of you want to make a difference. I hope not. What a empty cliche. Hitler made a difference. Maybe you want to build something. And you know, the young, now I'm speaking to most people who are young, but some people who are old, you know who you are. The young mostly simply do not believe the old even. The old say to the young, "You know, life is short." In fact, I want you to put in your memories right now. This old man said to you on March 23, 2016, "Life is short." You don't believe me, but have it there to remember that 50 years ago, when you get to be my age, 50 years ago, the interim president of Geneva College warned me, "Life is short." And where did the time go? How did I get like this? Where did this body come from? And I'm afraid I know where it's going. The old will tell you, by the time you're 75, nobody cares that you were CEO of a company, including you. But our society says work, 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 ambition, 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 career, 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 strive, strive, strive. And we hear that message. Achievement is not all it is cracked up to be. Now, why do the young disbelieve the old? Well, it's because the young don't believe God, and neither do the old for that matter. What is a life that is full? Well, Jesus told us, a full life is a life of humility before God and man. A full life is a life devoted to peacemaking. A full life is devoted to, well, maybe even being persecuted for righteousness' sake. Don't bother getting rich. It won't last. You know, that's a message that doesn't resonate with either Donald Trump or Mr. Sanders or anybody else running for office. But it's Jesus' message. Why bother getting rich? It won't last. Lay up for yourself treasure in heaven where moth and rust and inflation and deflation and everything else don't corrupt. And there are no taxes. Do we believe that? Well, our life will show whether we believe it or whether we don't. Don't worry about tomorrow. Now, why not? Well, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. God keeps the future secret from us. Here's a person not to believe. The financial advisor who can tell you what the stock market is going to do next week. All right? He's a liar. Now, he may be right by chance, but if he actually claims that he knows, he's a liar. I'm going to finish soon my year as... remember the old TV show, Queen for a Day? All right, so I'm going to be finishing my president for a year. I've had fun working with many of the people I've worked with. They're good people. I've enjoyed going to games, especially when we win. I have, I don't know, how sanctified is that? I have liked going to concerts and plays. They've been well done. I have a few things I can point to that I've accomplished, or at least think so. But where am I going to find life? You know, after I leave here, no one is going to remember me for very long. And if somebody says to me something so foolish as, "Ah, Bill, we'll never forget you," I'll know I'm talking to a self-deceived, to be generous, person. Where is our life? Well, Jesus is the beginner and the goal of my faith and my life, and he is my judge. And there are no sweeter words that I ever look forward to hearing than, "Well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your Lord." And there are no words that I more deeply and viscerally fear than, "Depart from me, you worker of iniquity, into outer darkness." Believe Jesus. Know that he lives and reigns. And you will live to hear those words and not be found looking for the living among the dead. Because Jesus, our Son, has risen with healing in his wings, and he is our life. I went to see the Shakespeare play that campus put on a couple weeks ago, Much Ado About Nothing. It's in a small theater. We only put it on four times, so I know most of you did not see it. It's actually my favorite of all the Shakespeare plays. And actually, after I saw it, I was I went out and looked up and watched two DVD versions of other performances of it, and just enjoyed watching it again. It's a movie with this lighthearted, happy ending after some pretty nasty goings on. The bride is slandered. She then is rejected. She then is left for dead and reported as dead. And then the lies are exposed, and she is brought pretending to be the cousin of the one who was slandered. And she marries Claudio, who looks at her as he lifts the veil and says, "Another hero." Her name is Hero. And she answered, "Nothing certainer. One hero died defiled, but I do live, and surely as I live, I am a maid. Innocent, slandered, dead, alive, married righteously, and we look forward to the marriage with the lion who is a lamb." Those of you who are going home this Easter, whether to happy families or not happy families, if you believe in your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead, and you confess that with your mouth, you have God's word straight from himself that you belong to him. And whatever troubles life brings to you, you have no deep reason to feel sorry for yourself. You are blessed by God. There is a greeting that the Greeks use throughout the world on Easter. They use it one day a year. And so I learned this when we lived in the island of Cyprus. And the greeting is Christos Anesti, Christ is risen. And when you are given that greeting, and it's always a happy morning, the answer is Alithos Anesti, truly he is risen. Four words in Greek, seven words in English. I just read about a week ago an account by the sociologist Peter Berger. It was an article I read about a Soviet Union, especially in its early days, used to conduct campaigns of atheist propaganda. And so in a village, the commissar gathered the people together in front of the church, included the priest along there, and for an hour lectured the people on the illusions of religion. And then he magnanimously waved to the Orthodox priest and said, "You may have 5 minutes to answer me." And the priest said, "I will not lead 5 minutes." And the priest turned to his people and said, in Russian, "Christ is risen, Christos Anesti." And the whole village answered, "Alithos Anesti, he is risen indeed." That is the reply that we have in the face of a world heading for decay and doom. So go home in peace. Do not look for the living among the dead. And to those of you who believe, you have God's peace and God's grace is with you. Thank you.